This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
And the wake-up call is also brought to you by Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. They provide all your spring travel gear, including shorts, duffel bags, cool sun hats. You can find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barrack Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville and at BRMS.com. Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome. Oh, my gosh, it's June 1st, 2008. Doesn't matter where you're listening, Harrisonburg, Lexington, Lynchburg, even those folks in Lovingston on 94.7. A topic today that I think, and as we'll find out throughout the hour with our guest Sue Friedman, is a topic that affects everyone in one way or another. This is not politics, but it is health and family. And so, of course, there we are with that. That always touches everyone. Ms. Friedman, how are you today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me, Rick.
Well, I appreciate you coming down here. Sue Friedman, and your official title, please.
President of the Alzheimer's Association Central and Western Virginia Chapter.
How many chapters are there in Virginia?
There are 4 in Virginia and 77 in the United States.
How do you reach that stage and that interest? I mean, were you a volunteer for Alzheimer's and worked your way up due to your compassion or your financial and managerial skills? Is your interest come from a family background?
It's very a good question, Rick. I've spent my career in the nonprofit world, so when this opportunity arose a year and a half ago, it seemed like a great opportunity to bring my past experience to a very, very important cause. Consequentially, after I took this job, I have had a family member diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. So I have both a professional and a personal interest in this cause right now.
But you didn't get involved with Alzheimer's after you had had someone affected.
No.
But before.
Before. Rick, as one of those baby boomers and as someone who tries to keep abreast of the news and what's out there on the future, it's pretty clear to me that Alzheimer's is the next big issue for all of us. And to be able to participate in the organization and work for the chapter and the National Association seemed like a great opportunity for me. And I hope it will turn out to be as good an opportunity for the association.
Well, let's just hope that you can one day say, problem solved.
Exactly.
Under my running.
Well, the vision is a world without Alzheimer's.
Where does the name come from?
It's a great question and one we actually have.
Now I'm used to that. I'm going to be full of great questions, so don't have to spot them all out because then it'll be obvious when I ask a lame one.
Yes, your listeners know well. Alois Alzheimer, back in 1901 in Germany, had a patient come to him, a physician, who is exhibiting behaviors he had not seen before. Turns out, after she died, an autopsy was done. He discovered the 2 main ingredients in the brain that we now know are precursors of Alzheimer's, the plaques and the tangles. So because of his work, his research, his patient, and his sharing of that information, the disease has been called Alzheimer's after Alois Alzheimer.
Yeah, now, you mentioned plaques and tangles. One of the things that that is difficult on a show of this topic is that I expect that there are a fair percentage of listeners, tuning in because they heard us talking about it about the week and promoting the fact that you would be here and this would be the discussion, because it is part of their family.
Definitely.
And then there are those folks who are enjoying the day cleaning their house who are just tuning in maybe to learn more or because of my sexy voice. And plaques and tangles to them is what?
Well, the research is getting us closer and closer to knowing exactly how that happens, but we know what they are. In the brain, there is a message pathway, let's call it. It has to do with neurons and dendrites and all kinds of genetic material. But basically, there's a message pathway, and that, shall we say, the railroad of messages gets clogged. And it gets clogged with those plaques. Plaque in the heart may be very similar to plaque in the brain. So it's a clogging mechanism, if you will. And the tangles are when those messenger pathways, the dendrites, as they're called, but parts of the brain's message system become tangled up. So the bottom line, the result is that memory, that message, doesn't get where it needs to go. And therefore, you have the progressive decline in memory and judgment and so forth.
All right, let's do a little bit of the facts and figures so that those who are not familiar with Alzheimer's, much more than, you know, reading about it and hearing about it, what I call the first paragraph, folks. You read the headline, you read the first paragraph, and then you move on to the next article to catch them up to speed on everyone else. Number of people suffering from Alzheimer's, and let's leave this at a United States so we can get a better grasp on it.
5.2 million and rising every 71 seconds. Yes, every 71 seconds, a new American hears the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease.
So almost 60 people during this program?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Wow. It is a disease that the one clear correlation we have is age. And as someone with the American Heart Association said to me, we're helping people live longer, which is very true. And now they're at risk of Alzheimer's. So we know as the brain and the body age, the incidence of Alzheimer's increases. So as we have this huge bubble of 78 million baby boomers coming into their 60s and 70s, the increase in Alzheimer's is going to be pretty dramatic.
And as we know, this is the largest bubble,
yes, sir,
of individuals that this country has ever seen.
Most definitely.
So that's a number, 5.2 million.
And counting.
And counting. Number or percentage of American families that ends up affecting?
I would say 100%, Rick, because if you look at immediate family, if you look at extended family, if you look at employers, if you look at volunteers, if you look at your churches and synagogues and mosques and temples, nearly every American is going to say, yes, I know someone who is dealing with Alzheimer's. And it's beyond the patient. We had this conversation before. Certainly the 5.2 million individuals with Alzheimer's have a very hard road to be on, but all of their caregivers are there with them. So when you take 5.2 million and multiply it by those caregivers, those family, friends, neighbors who are helping to take care of them, and then expand that to their circle, it's nearly 100% of Americans who have been impacted by Alzheimer's.
I should toss out there the background that my maternal grandfather, and my grandmother, in a later and much shorter sense, but my maternal grandfather suffered from Alzheimer's, Parkinson's disease for a number of years. And shortly after the first break, we're going to call my mother and talk about how that affected the family.
Definitely.
And it'll be a little different than it probably affects many others, because she had two siblings, because there was some financial resources that some other folks don't have. But we're going to call her and talk about that. But obviously this topic, when you talk about families that it affects,
definitely,
I fall into that category. So we know that you mentioned that for Alzheimer's diseases, we are talking with Sue Friedman, the president and CEO of the Central and Western Virginia Alzheimer's Association. You mentioned age.
Yes, sir.
As something that you can definitively tie into this. How many versions aren't there multiple versions of Alzheimer's? I mean, I mentioned Parkinson's disease. If I tell somebody that my grandfather had Alzheimer's and Parkinson's disease, are those two separate things, or is that a subcategory of one?
They're two separate things. They both have a very definitive neurological and genetic base, if you will. But they are two separate diseases, and oftentimes they do go together. But to look at the big picture, as you asked, there's dementia. And dementia is cognitive problems with the brain. Of dementia problems, 60 to 70% are Alzheimer's disease. The other 30 to 40% of dementia could be vascular dementia. As an example, someone might suffer a stroke, and the stroke causes damage that causes cognitive problems, memory problems, dementia, if you will. But most of the incidents of dementia will be diagnosed as Alzheimer's disease.
And so you mentioned that age is the number one. Are there other causes that have been attached at this point?
We know what happens. We know that that memory railroad, if you will, the memory distribution, the message distribution center gets clogged. Why it happens is still being researched. So the research is looking at three or four different segments. Why does this happen? What can we do right now to stop the progression of the disease in those who have heard the diagnosis? And then what can we do to, if you will, predict some who might suffer from Alzheimer's? And then how could we change that course?
So you mentioned that the German physician,
yes,
Alzheimer, first had his first patient in 1901?
1901.
Okay. And I'm assuming at that point it was not a large enough concern for lots of time and money to be spent on it. He probably devoted much of his life, or certainly a big part of his life, to researching it further, and I'm sure that there are individuals who did so. But at what point did it sort of, you know, get on the radar screen of our medical community?
It's interesting to note that the Alzheimer's Association at the national level was formed in 1980. That's pretty recent.
Yeah.
That's pretty recent.
You're talking almost 80 years for it to be out there before it,
exactly,
it had someone or an organization to
And I think many things had to come together. Number one, the average life expectancy in 1901 was 46, and now it's 76 plus. So again, we had to create opportunities to live longer for the incidence of Alzheimer's to become more prevalent. And then alongside that, research, medical research, had to move forward enough to be able to investigate, if you will, what goes on in the brain. So those two came together in the 60s and 70s. But it's very recent, actually, in terms of a medical cause and the research around it. But the research is becoming quite robust because of those numbers.
1114, as we talk about Alzheimer's with Sue Friedman from the local Alzheimer's Association. So 1901 is when it's discovered. 1980 is when the Alzheimer's Association is founded on a national level. And here we are 28 years later.
Yes.
And we still have no cause.
We have many, many hypotheses, if you will. There are environmental issues. There are...
Such as?
The question is, the big question is, are there environmental issues that could impact the...
You mean like lead in the water kind of thing?
Yes, those kinds of things. But basically, what we're beginning to believe is it's about basic genetic research, that something goes wrong as the brain ages.
Is this like my car? Which it just gets too old after a while, too many
could
miles
well
on
be.
It.
But we look at, let's take knees. Knees now get replaced because knees wear out. Knees weren't made to live 100 years, most likely. And so knees get replaced because they get worn out. Eyes have glasses because, I don't know about you, but when I hit 40, my eyesight started going way downhill.
Yeah, mine went really downhill at age 8, I think, is when I had to wear glasses.
You were unusual.
I was really hot.
But, you know, if you think about all of our body and how as we age, the parts age. So it is very much like your car. The brain, if you will, is probably the last frontier. We did a huge push in heart research and have done a great job in figuring out about cholesterol, about blood pressure, about diet, about exercise, about heredity. So it's that kind of holistic focus around what are all the things that could cause this genetic mishap, if you will, in the cognitive part of the brain that is going to bear fruit. But it's taking a lot of research to get to that point.
You also mentioned, or in the reading that you gave me, is more women than men have this? Is that strictly an age factor?
It is. It is strictly an age factor.
As far as you know
factor.
At this point?
As far as we know, it's strictly about age. As far as we know, the research, and again, research is something that must be done in a very controlled way, a very valid, reliable way, and replicated. So these are not one study. There are many studies that have built upon each other. But the research so far, according to our 2008 report, which you saw, indicates that gender and racial ethnicity are not particular causes, if you will, or correlated to the disease.
Yeah, and that caught me off guard. Okay, so I know from what little personal experience through my family that I feel like I gathered from it, from the reading that you gave me, I already knew that age was the major mm-hmm. issue, and so the fact that women have more suffering, you know, a greater number than men didn't surprise me. But race, wasn't sure how that played into it because I'm not aware of other races that live longer where age would be a part, and educational background.
Mm-hmm. Educational background is kind of a two-edged sword, really. The literature, the research is showing there appears to be, and again, research needs to be replicated to be proven, if you will. But there appears to be what we would call a protective factor or a cognitive reserve for additional years of education. So those with a bachelor's degree, a master's degree, a doctorate, there seems to be some evidence that they are protected for a longer period of time before the incidence of Alzheimer's. But still, 1 in 2 over the age of 85, no matter what their educational background, will hear the diagnosis.
1 in 2?
Yes, sir. Hear the diagnosis.
You know, it's you say that, and then last week.
And then we look at each other and say, okay, which one
right,
of us?
Which one? It's me, by the way, because we're going to get into that. How do you tell? And what's the difference between symptoms of Alzheimer's and memory changes without normal aging that you have on here? It already freaked me out. But last week we did a show and one of the panelists was 87.
Mm-hmm.
Still driving, still playing golf, still does water aerobics 3 times a week, you know, and normal everyday life. It just so happens that she has 87 years behind her as opposed to you or I with whatever our current ages are. and so to think that that's because of her being okay, that there's one other person who's suffering, I have a hard time putting my head on top of that and understanding it or finding it fair, I guess
well,
is a better way to put
is
it.
Is disease ever seem... fair? Really?
I don't know. That's really? That's a more...
That's a
question
a
for another hour or three.
More.
All right, 11:20 on the wake up call. Sue Friedman, from the Central and West Virginia chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. Let me do the weather, and then we're going to have my mom on the air.
Great.
Markets of Tiger Fuels for forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Partly cloudy, slight chance of isolated showers and thunderstorms today, 80 to 85. Clear tonight, lows 50 to 55, mostly sunny tomorrow. Highs 80 to 85 again right now. Pretty sunny across the listening area. In the valley, it's 80, 77 in Lynchburg, 85 in Richmond, and just 77 here in Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
All right. We also want to thank Wild Greens and the IVN for their support today. You can find the IVN. They are featuring locally inspired seasonal American cuisine in an historic 18th century house with a garden patio. They're on Old Ivy Road in Charlottesville. The IVN serves dinner Monday through Saturday from 5 until 9. Reservations recommended. More can be found at IVNRestaurant.com. All right, let me push all the proper buttons. Mother?
Yes, hi, Rick.
How are you today, ma'am?
I am good. How are you?
I'm doing well. You've been to church?
I have.
Are you,
I did see Wren. He was there.
You did. So my nephew, Wren, who several regular listeners have heard on the air many times, when he called to make a pledge during the fundraiser, he wouldn't leave any of his money unless he got to say hi over the air. Wren is 4, by the way, so...
Up and coming, I can tell.
Yes, he is. He's quite the ham. And so, Mom, you're on your way out to play golf.
Yes, we are.
Okay. So I won't take too much of your time, but as I told you earlier, we are talking about Alzheimer's, and Granddaddy suffered from Alzheimer's.
Actually, both of your grandparents had dementia.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm correct, and your guests can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Alzheimer's is a something that you cannot determine without an autopsy. Is that correct?
It's interesting that you say that. There are several myths around Alzheimer's. And you can make a diagnosis of Alzheimer's now with our enhanced testing and MRIs and CAT scans and those kinds of things before death. But to definitively say, yes, there are plaques and tangles, or we can see the physiological components of Alzheimer's, it is an autopsy. But Dr. Carol Manning at the Memory Disorders Clinic at the University of Virginia has said many times that we can make the diagnosis when someone is living. So in some ways that's no longer true, but to be scientifically definitive, it would be the autopsy.
And, Mom, I not for lack of love or respect to Grandma, but she had it. She seemed to suffer for a much shorter period of time. Correct. My memory is that Granddad was suffering, and she was okay, and then she suffered and she passed away first.
That's correct from your perspective. She was diagnosed with diabetes in 1954, and at that time, he decided that he was going to take care of her regardless. He was going to take care of her. When she, as they aged, and he got to the point where we could tell that there were some things missing in his cognitive abilities.
Well, he called the police a couple times, right? Because there were people breaking into the house or something?
Right.
Yes. They would call their neighbors down the street, their best friends, neighbors down the street, and say, what time is it our electricity has gone out? Well, it was because they couldn't read the clock. So then several times they did call the police in the middle of the night, because one or the other of them would, I think probably my mother would say, I hear a noise, and there's somebody in here. And then they would call the police, and the police came 2 or 3 times. That's those were just some of the indications for us that there was something dreadfully wrong. And then when her physical health was not nearly as good as his.
Hmm.
She would go in the hospital in the last 4 or 5 years before her death. She would go in the hospital on the average of once a month for pneumonia. And she was very, her health was very, very unstable. And during one of those times, my brother, sister, and I decided that it was time for them to be in assisted living.
And that's what I want to talk about, the caregiving aspect.
Yes.
Of it. While we still have you on here, we are talking to my mother, Ann Moore. We also have Sue Friedman, president and CEO of the Alzheimer's Association from Central and Western Virginia, here on WNRN. I want to talk about being the caretaker part, because as we're going to get to after we hang up with you, Sue and I are going to talk about the, I guess, the wear and tear on the caregiver. You, with two siblings, had two parents that you had to take care of at the same time.
That's correct.
And didn't each of you take a part of their life? Wasn't someone responsible for finances and someone else responsible for trips to the doctor and so forth?
Yes. Our brother was flying all over the country and all over the world. He's still doing that with his job. So he wasn't physically around to do as much as my sister and I. Both of us were in the same town. Our parents lived in the same town we did, which made it very convenient. So she took care of the finances, and I took care of the health issues. I took them to the doctor whenever they needed to go to the doctor for whatever reason. And I took her to the hospital whenever we had to go to the emergency room. In fact, we went to the emergency room so many times, one of the women thought I worked at the hospital.
Oh, my goodness. Did you find it trying to have them alone in their home? Or did you have to make arrangements to check in on them or have neighbors check in on them?
After a point, when it became apparent that my father could not take care of her, really, he knew that.
Hmm.
She was not willing to accept that.
Denial is a huge part.
At one point, while she was in the hospital, we arranged to have them move to assisted living.
Mm-hmm.
And that worked out really, really well. My father was very much more at ease. You could tell that he was just so relieved to have part of that burden taken off of him.
Right.
But then it got to the point where he was his cognitive functionings weren't even as good as hers.
Hmm.
She could pull herself together for an hour.
You know, you mentioned that your father didn't want to acknowledge that he couldn't do it. That denial is, and that pride, I guess, and that greatest generation feeling that we can take care of this and we'll just keep this in the family and we'll soldier on, really does cause people to go through a lot of stress in caregiving when they could have reached out for help.
We also have to remember he was a soldier.
Definitely.
He had been in World War II.
The greatest generation is the greatest generation, but they're the ones dealing with Alzheimer's now, and too often we find they don't access the support and services we can provide until they've been down a really hard road.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, he had, at some point after her diagnosis in 1954, he had talked to an acquaintance. He was very active in the American Legion, and they went to some convention or something, and he had talked to an acquaintance. And at the time, they were still dealing with the impact of what this diagnosis meant. And this other gentleman told my father that he was going to have to take care of her.
Oh.
And my father took that to heart.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Hey, Mom, one of the things, as we finish up with you, and I'll let you go hit a bucket of balls, is, you know, we talked about how you shared everything, and when I get back with just Sue and I, not everyone has that opportunity. But also, for so many caregivers, the finances aren't there. You had the ability as a family to provide care that not everyone can provide.
This is true. We were very fortunate in that both of their retirements were sufficient that we could draw on them to pay for the assisted living facility, and we could also, at another point, we had to have someone with them all the time, because at that time the assisted living facility was not able to provide the kind of care that they needed.
Right.
So we had to hire private people. We were very fortunate to have someone in the same community, a distant relative, a young woman who was a distant cousin, who went there with them every single day. Prior to that, we had been using home health services, and that was an absolute nightmare. I would say twice a month, we would have to switch health care providers.
Oh, my.
Home health service people. Because at that time, the people that they were sending out to sit with my parents had no clue how to handle an Alzheimer's patient.
Well, and I imagine this has been a while ago.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Fortunately, the home health folks and community resources, nurses and friendly visitors and volunteers, that's one of the main things the Alzheimer's Association offers them, is to provide them with an in-depth training on how to deal with individuals who have dementia and Alzheimer's, because one of the main things is you have to throw logical thinking out the window.
Absolutely.
And because that's simply going to prolong agitation and argumentation.
Absolutely.
And there are many different ways.
At that time,
exactly,
the home health people hadn't realized that
No.
that was a different kind of patient.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I'm sure that we'll hear from my friend Jean McCusker shortly after hang up with my mom.
You notice I jumped right in and said how the field has changed.
Yes. Sorry, Jean. But remember, this was a while ago.
It was like 10 years ago.
Definitely.
We'll let you have your speak. I do, even though things were, like you said, that it was difficult to even get an hour of cognitive ability from them, that the aides, he was, granted, was it almost all the family functions?
Yes, at the end with your grandfather, there was a male nurse that we hired, and he was excellent. He could get your grandfather to move when nobody else could get him to move, get him in the car and out of the car, and we took both of them to all the family functions. We made sure that they were both a male nurse and your grandfather were at everything they could possibly.
The male nurse even got Christmas presents as much as
yes.
as I remember.
Yes, that's correct.
And he was a family member in that sense.
Yes.
All right. Anything else before you go that you think I might have forgotten or skimmed over?
No, I don't think so. It was a difficult time. But,
does it still haunt you today?
You know, thinking about it, you wouldn't do anything less.
No.
Does it still haunt you today?
Only when I forget somebody's name.
Which is normal, because you remember it a few hours later, correct?
That's right.
There you go.
Yeah, so
normal aging.
All right.
Right.
Thanks, Mom.
Okay.
Thank you.
Shoot a good game.
All righty. Bye-bye.
All right. 11:34 here on the Wake Up Call. That was my mother. We also have Sue Friedman here in the studio today as we talk about Alzheimer's. Let me thank Blue Ridge Graphics, because they allow shows like this to happen, and a little donation through their underwriting so that we can call my mother long distance. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Mead Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom T-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. And at brgtshirts.com. 979-0919. If you'd like to call up and you have some stories to tell about how your family was affected by Alzheimer's, or ask a question because it's something that you're going through now, Gene McCusker, if you're out there, I want to talk about, is it Home Instead?
Home Instead.
Which, based on my knowledge and my interaction with Gene, is an organization that provides some home health care and has learned a lot about dealing with Alzheimer's.
Well, Gene McCusker is 4 years the chair of our annual Memory Walk event, the largest event in the country, in support of Alzheimer's Association. And we certainly appreciate her support in that area, too.
Let me take a moment, Sue, and my mom finished off with, is unable to remember the name, and you said until a few hours later, because that's, I think, something a lot of people, whether they are joking or whether they are questioning themselves, is, and you've given me a sheet here, what's the difference between symptoms of Alzheimer's and memory changes with normal aging?
Most definitely, and I must tell you, since I've taken this great opportunity with the Alzheimer's Association, 100% of the time when I introduce myself and my affiliation, I get a memory joke. Like, what'd you say? Or, what's your name? So it is something that we're very quick to joke about, but we're also, I think, all very interested and even concerned.
But it's always done with that sort of underlying, you know, sensibility about, so is this
I need
true
to talk
not?
To you.
It's
fine. You can talk with me. That's fine. You know, again, we go back to the knees and the joints and the back and everything and the eyes. As our bodies get older, they age. So it's normal that you would have slower reaction time when you drive when you're 80. I mean, AARP has a wonderful program to help senior drivers be aware that they probably have slower reaction time. So it's normal to, that brain has got a lot in it. And I'm sure, Rick, yours has got twice as much as mine. But just think of all the information we've piled into our brain.
I have a lot of wasted, as my girlfriend would say, wasted space on sports figures and stuff like that.
Well, some of us don't think that's wasted. But, you know, the brain in some ways works like a computer. So every now and then your computer gets a little slow. Well, so to forget a name, and even to forget a name of someone you've known for decades, and then to remember it in the middle of the night or while you're cooking dinner, oh, that's Rick Moore's last name, Moore. That's kind of normal. That pathway just got short-circuited for the moment.
What if it happens every day?
If it happens every day, I will say this. If an individual has concerns, they need to let their physician know. And they and their physician need to decide if there are any preliminary kind of baseline investigative medical work that needs to be done. Part of the long process and the in-depth process of coming to an Alzheimer's diagnosis is a cognitive interview. And that's a pretty non-invasive thing to do, but it can also help a neurologist in particular if your physician refers you on to a neurologist, if you feel together that there may be concerns, just as we're referred on to a podiatrist or we're referred on to a pulmonologist for lung issues, one might be referred on to a neurologist.
Interesting that you say that because, as regular listeners know, I do suffer from epilepsy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I see a neurologist or an epileptologist, and I happen to see one on some day last week, and but it was a different doctor, and we began the visit with, "Do you know where you are? Can you tell me what day? Can you tell me what day of the week it is?
Establishing place and time.
I'm going to give you three words that I want you to remember, and I'll ask them. I'll ask you what they are a little bit later. And so she, you know, pokes and prods and smacks my knee with a rubber hammer.
She's doing a cognitive, a quick and simple cognitive assessment.
Right. And I really hadn't, I mean, I guess at the time I knew, but I hadn't thought that it would also carry over to Alzheimer's.
It can very well give a physician an opportunity to say, this needs more investigation. So anyone that has concerns or has concerns for a loved one, don't let those concerns be put on the back shelf. I think that's another thing that neurologists and medical experts in the field tell us. Early diagnosis is critically important because the research is going to catch up to the disease. So the earlier one is diagnosed and the better opportunity we have to slow down that progression, then the better opportunity one will have to take advantage of the research when it comes out. And we're looking at all kinds. A vaccine is an example of something they're looking at, could be a possibility. So there's lots out there.
And right, let me do this real quick. I see the phone ringing as well, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. I want to come back and go through the difference between normal memory changes from aging and symptoms from Alzheimer's. But it is 1140 on the Wake Up Call with Sue Friedman from the Central Virginia and Western Virginia Alzheimer's Association.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, let's thank 45fix.com for their support. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting to decks and siding, that's 45fix.com. Immediate, no obligation estimates available anytime. That's the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. And check out The Hook this week. The Hook looks into a murder mystery from Buckingham County. Will the recent change in sheriff department leadership help solve the crime? It's been said that a man's shoes tell his life story, but if you only get to wear them twice before they fall apart, doesn't that say something about who made them or where you bought them? And The Hook takes a look at the difference between renovating the Charlottesville downtown mall for $7.5 million or just $600,000. The Hook, helping keep all of us literate. And our man Drew Thompson just walked in the studio. He'll be here at noon, so don't go anywhere for Les Temps Perdue. If French isn't your thing here at the station, that means the time's gone by. And on WNRN, that's late 80s through 90s alternative. Tune in for it next. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. All right. I keep seeing the phone ring, and Michael's not patching anybody through. Maybe he's answering the questions for them, or they just want to know when Drew is due in. Drew's here now, folks. So, but you have to wait till noon to start making your requests for Les Temps. 1142 979-0919 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. I do feel obligated to throw out one more time. Homeinstead.com, Gene McCusker, a friend of the show. And, you know, when my mother mentioned having problems, talking about something that happened in the mid-90s, and if the Alzheimer's Association as an organization wasn't formed until 1980, that means that's halfway through where we were now. And you think about everything that we've learned, all the people that have been trained in different manners and better manners to handle the disease.
So. Most definitely. We work with nearly all of the college nursing programs in our region, providing part of their community clinical classwork around Alzheimer's training. So you're exactly right, Rick. It's much more sensitivity and awareness.
All right. A couple things that I want to get into here on the last part of the show. I want to talk about the difference between Alzheimer's and normal memory changes. I want to talk about what the local organization can provide in terms of advice and counseling and current research, et cetera. So let's do this real quick. Difference between symptoms of Alzheimer's and normal memory changes through aging.
Definitely. We've talked a lot about remembering names and forgetting a part of a name or a full name, but often remembering it later is normal, unfortunately. It is normal for us. But if you're rarely able to remember that name later, that's a concern. That's something you want to look into. Forgetting part of an experience. You remember you went to Hawaii and you remember what you did on the first day and the third day, but somehow that second day you can't quite get all the details together. That's unfortunately normal. But if you forget that you went to Hawaii, that's, again, a cause for some concern and some further investigation. I don't know about you, Rick, but I live by to-do lists. If I write it down, it'll get done. And so usually able to follow those written and spoken directions and lists, that's a normal aging thing. Again, there's a lot up there and there's a lot going on. So if you need to write it down to remember it, that's probably normal. But if you write it down and then still can't understand what the written word says.
How about if you write it down but still don't do it?
Then that's just your choice to be a procrastinator.
Okay.
Your mom said they no longer understood how to read the clock. Well, if you write a note and then you can no longer decipher the letters, that's a real problem and something that you'll want to investigate medically a little further. And then gradually being unable to care for oneself, especially around judgment. And I'll give you a small example. You invite grandma to go out to Wendy's for lunch because she knows she loves that Wendy's salad. And when you pick her up, she's got on her patent leather shoes and her hat and her matching pocketbook and her gloves and her Sunday best. That's not usual judgment for what to wear to go to Wendy's. So that would be a concern too. So it's not partial forgetting, but it's complete forgetting, and it's not needing to write things down. It's no longer being able to read because you don't understand how the letters go together.
And there's a lot of information here. You said that there are over 200 and some bits of information,
yes,
pamphlets and stuff. ALZ.com?
ALZ.org.
.org. There's 10 ways to maintain your brain. There's 10 warning signs of Alzheimer's disease, et cetera. Things that we're just not going to get into during the hour because we have a phone call.
Wonderful.
Caller, how are you?
Hi, how are you? Good morning.
Doing well.
I was just stating to your other person that I find myself in uncharted territories at this point. My mother is in her late 60s and has been diagnosed, and my father is still alive and able to help. But I find that you guys have just touched on a lot of the key stuff that we were starting to recognize, and for the longest time probably failed to admit until we had a lot of the tests done. And your guest there was just touching on some of the ways about dress, and I find that my mother gets up and gets dressed to the T pretty much every day, even though she doesn't know where she's going. So, I find myself in uncharted territories right now, and looking maybe possibly for some support group. My father is in his mid-70s, and I know soon it will be pretty much left up to me to take care of her, and so I. Just looking for a little direction as far as that.
Well, that's a beautiful segue.
It is.
Caller, I'm going to let you hang up and listen on the radio. Is that okay?
That's quite all right. And I apologize for tuning in so late, and if you've already repeated some of this.
Well, you know what? If you can listen on your computer, www.cvillepodcast.com, sometime later today we will have the entire hour up. And you can listen from the beginning. You can also listen to my mother talk about how she and my siblings, or she and her siblings, dealt with my grandfather and grandmother's disease with Alzheimer's.
All right, so I would be glad to do that. And thank you so much for touching on the subject, and I will certainly do that.
All right, I'll let you listen into Sue.
Thank you very much.
Rick, he brings up an issue that we hear many times every day, and my first and most important recommendation would be to give us a call, to call our office and start the process of finding out how you can support Dad, how you can support yourself in your emotional and physical and financial and legal issues that will come up. And we're here in town, right here in Charlottesville, behind Charlottesville Fashion Square Mall at 973-6122. And what we'll do is we'll start with what we call a care consultation. Can be done on the phone, can be done in person, but we want to sit down with the caller, with his dad, if he'd like to come, and to help hear. We want to listen to what's going on, but unfortunately, we kind of know what's coming next. So we want to help the family understand what's next and what's after that and what's after that.
But each family's different. Like we were talking with my mom about having different financial capabilities than some others, or having three children, mom and two siblings, as opposed to having one person who may have to be the sole caretaker.
And where you live. An awful lot of adult children don't live near their parents, but they still want to be very supportive and do what they need to do to help them. But what we can do is help put together a care plan, if you will. Okay, this is the next issue that we need to be mindful of. I can't overestimate how important the legal and financial issues are. It is better as a family to be prepared for what might come when there's still cognitive ability that's recognized by the banks and by the courts than to wait. And so there are many very nuts and bolts issues that we will bring up, that we will say these are things that we need to pay attention to.
I guess in the grand scheme of things, a silly question, but does the caretaker receive any federal financial aid, maybe through tax relief or anything like that?
Not yet, but that is one of the bipartisan pieces of legislation that sits before Congress as we speak. And that is an area that needs to be supported by all of us, because right now many caretakers have to decrease their work opportunity or leave their work opportunity to be an unpaid caretaker. And they're going to do that because they love their family.
I had a childhood friend who was living in Richmond, who, you know, we grew up where we grew up on the Bay, and she was driving an hour to an hour and a half each weekend, you know, down to help relieve her father for care of her mother.
Exactly.
And then be back. And so she's away from her husband and her two children. And that's what she did every weekend for a year and a half.
She is not alone. It's amazing how many family members and friends, but especially family members, have two lives. They have their life that they are in at their age, and then they have the life where they're taking care of usually a parent or an aunt or an uncle or a loved one.
All right, so you bring your, you know, the caller or some folks in similar circumstances who are just getting started into things can come in and get some
help.
Have
an individual consultation.
Is there a way to call, whether it's through you or
yes,
through a national organization, who are already dealing with it and who need, whether they need counseling on a particular problem,
mm-hmm,
or they, gosh, just please just remind me about what I can do to keep myself, you know, that those down times when
Definitely.
You need someone to support you.
When we're not in the office, our 800 number is answered by a live person 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, through our national center where we have social workers, counselors, and the like. And that number is 1-800-272-3900. So you can call 1-800-272-3900 day or night, weekend or weekday, just to have someone keep you from pulling all of your hair out. You're right, just to take that break away from the caregiving issues. So that number is always there,
and
always
Michael,
available.
Michael will put that up on the podcast
yes.
site again, along with the link, alz.org. Mm-hmm. We'll put the 1-800 number, www.sevillepodcast.com. And you can find this show up later today. 11:53 here as we wind down the hour, which has gone by very quickly for me. Sue Friedman, president and CEO of the Alzheimer's Association from Central and Western Virginia, as of course we are talking about Alzheimer's. Time for another call or two if you'd like. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. So you haven't even touched on
all the other support
factors, but I'm curious about where current research stands. At the very beginning of the hour, we talked about the cause there were several comments or phrases that you used that made me think, gosh, we certainly don't have a cure now. I did read somewhere where there was a cure, and I can't even remember whether it was a pill, a tablet, a shot, or whatever, that was sort of prolonging the drowning
yes,
almost.
The progression.
For 6 months or so, but that was really all that we had, right?
That's all we have, but in July, the International Conference on Alzheimer's Disease Research will happen in Chicago. We will have 15,000 researchers making over 2,000 presentations about hard science, advances on all fronts, on the cure front, on the diagnosis front, on the prevention front. And there are many things that they're looking at. Spinal fluid may be a way to determine if those genetic misfires are going to happen. Believe it or not, they're looking at the fluid around the eyeball. You know how we get that puff of air?
Don't gross me out.
I know.
For glaucoma test?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm freaky
about
that. Well,
there may be something in the fluid around the eyeball that helps us determine that there is a pre-Alzheimer's diagnosis. So they're looking at many, many things. I mentioned the vaccine. There may actually be a vaccine that can, if you will, reconfigure that genetic mishap that's happening in the message pathway in the brain. So the research is moving forward by leaps and bounds. We need more of it, but what research is out there now is moving forward by leaps and bounds because this is one of the most critical medical issues facing not just America, but the world.
This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Sue Friedman from the area Alzheimer's Association with just a few moments left. Sue, I guess this has got to be a standard question is, as we touched on so early, the number of people who are suffering or expected to suffer from Alzheimer's Association and ever growing. 1 out of 2 people over the age of 85, 5.2 million already suffering, and an extra person being identified within every 71 seconds. So as we finish up our hour, that's almost another 60 people who've been diagnosed. Are we as a country capable of dealing with this?
We
seem to be overwhelmed already and only expecting more.
We are capable of dealing with this. What it takes is focus, and I think that focus is beginning to sharpen for this country. As an example, the Centers for Disease Control has partnered with the Alzheimer's Association to create a brain health initiative, and they've done a roadmap for brain health, and that's being rolled out this year through all the health departments in the country as a public health issue.
But instead of, let me stop you for a minute, instead of because as Americans, we always want to say we can take on the battle. We're mm-hmm. smart enough. You know, if we set our mind to it, we can do it. But are we capable? Are we ready? Maybe the better word for it, for the increasing numbers. Do we have enough beds in homes? Do we have enough people trained to deal with the number of the increasing number of people who will be suffering? You're shaking your head no. So how do we do that? How do we solve that?
We know we don't have the money, the beds, or the human capability to care for 16 million individuals with Alzheimer's disease. Number one, it will bankrupt Medicare. Number two, even if we start today and build all the beds we think we need in assisted living and facility living, people don't have the funds to pay for it. So we have to look at a different way. We have to look at home-based care. We have to look at robust research and a focused research. You know, we said we were going to send a man to the moon and we did it. Well, we can say we are going to find a cure for Alzheimer's disease and we will do it. But it does take that complete focus across all sectors of the economy and the United States, the National Institutes of Health, the FDA, the public health system. All of us have to have a complete commitment to moving the research forward. The researchers feel, and I will tell you what our medical scientific director at the national office says, and he is approaching 65. He firmly believes that there will be a cure for Alzheimer's in his lifetime.
All right, well, send me out because we have about 45 seconds left, and I don't want to go out with that. Now, that's a great note, but send
yes.
me out. But my previous question was sort of a downer. Well, wow, we can't do anything. Send us out on a good note.
The Alzheimer's Association is doing things every minute of every day to support caregivers, to provide brain health opportunities at the workplace, in your church, in schools, and to increase the awareness of every American about what this disease is, what they can do now, and what we plan to do in the future to create a world without Alzheimer's. That's our vision, and we will reach it.
All right. Sue Friedman from President and CEO from the Alzheimer's Association of Central and West Virginia. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rick.
Thanks to Mom. Hope you shoot a good game. We'll be back next week. Adios, amigos.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call. This has been your Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on WNRN. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday, and by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon Gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Michael Strickland. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.